Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And only on January 18th, 2018.
Stole my
line.
Weird,
dude.
You think we're in another year.
Hey, right? 2018 is the future, right?
I mean, it is.
It's like, that's Buck Rogers, man. 2018. How you doing, Michael? Good to
see
you.
You know what? I was so happy to wake up with this to this particular day because it is stunning outside, and the temperature is like out of this world, right?
That's right. It's been beautiful, and it's obviously such a great day to be out and about in LA because so many great things are starting up at the beginning of the year. Great theater companies doing good things and tons of live performances for people.
Yeah, I just got a little note this morning from the Wallace Annenberg Theater about Patti LuPone, who's coming there for Valentine's Day.
Wow.
To do a concert with Seth Rudetsky.
Patti LuPone, can you imagine?
Yeah. I've seen her live and had the pleasure of meeting her, and she is amazing. She's almost a, you know, you kind of don't know what to say at the, she's so bigger than life
in
Broadway history.
Yeah.
But she's a lovely, very lovely woman.
And a great performer, obviously.
Yeah.
You can't
so that's
see
a
without
February 14th deal that she's doing over there with
Valentine's Day, very nice.
And it's a wonderful concept. Do you know that concept?
I don't.
Seth Rudetsky, you know who that is? Seth Rudetsky. He's a Broadway guy, he's a musical director, and he has this format that he takes out to mid-sized performing arts centers in the country, where it will involve a celebrity from Broadway, really a more well-known celebrity, such as Patti, and it's kind of part talk show and performance.
So cool.
She'll get up and do a performance, and then she'll sit down and they'll talk, and then it goes back and forth, and it's totally unscripted.
Wow, so she just decides when she's going to go into her next number or just hops?
Well, I mean, the numbers aren't.
But they feel it and they kind of hop up again.
Yeah, and he plays for her. He'll go over and he plays and they work it out.
Well, and the Wallace is obviously such a great space. We have so many great friends over there, too.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's a beautiful space.
Well, Michael, as you say, here we are on January 18th, and we do have a great show lined up for today, don't we?
We do indeed. We have one of the co-stars and the director of Moon Over Buffalo, a comedy coming soon, very soon, to the Morgan Wixon Theater in Santa Monica. Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, our two guests for this afternoon, Eric Pierce and Michael Thomas Viscar.
That's right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Welcome, guys. Welcome.
What applause.
We have one of the most supportive audiences on the radio.
Really? It's really great. I didn't expect a live studio audience.
That's right. Well, now, this theater is such a gem in the center of Santa Monica. Have you guys enjoyed working there so far?
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
The Morgan Wixon, I always tell people, is the best theater that you've never heard of in Santa Monica. Just because it's so well hidden. And they've been there for so long. They've been doing theater.
It's something like the 50s or something?
Yes. Santa Monica Theater Guild started in the 40s.
Wow.
And that building in particular isn't quite that old, but it's still about 40 plus years old, I would say. So it's been there forever, but it's disguised, so a lot of people don't even realize it's there.
Yeah,
but it's a terrific space.
It's right there on Pico.
Same thing happened to my career, actually. I disguised it for a long time.
I actually did a show there when I was a kid. I mean, I was really young. I was about 12 years old, I think.
Wow.
And it was a musical, and it was a take off an adult version of Hansel and Gretel, and it was called How to Succeed at Witchery Without Half Trying. And the young lady who played Gretel, I was Hansel, and she was Gretel, and her name was Debbie Shapiro Grevitt. That's her married name.
Okay.
And she went on. I knew that I was so in love with her, but she, you know, didn't give me a second look. And she went on to great things. I knew she would because she could sing like the bejesus then,
right?
You know, and she went on to win a Tony Award on Broadway for Jerome Robbins' review of his work.
Wow.
Yeah, so we keep in touch, and she's...
How great.
Yeah, she's been to the nightclub show. I'm trying to get her to headline her own show.
Maybe we can talk to the Morgan Wixon about redoing that show now, updating it, and having you guys come back and rock and roll.
Yeah.
Well, we will obviously be back to talk to our guest here in just a little bit more, Michael. But before we do that, we ought to pay some bills and thank our sponsors.
Yes, we should. And who we can thank today? We'd like to thank, of course, our brand new sponsor for 2018, Princess Cruises. And we'd like to thank them for coming on board. See how I did that?
Nicely done.
As presenting sponsors for State of the Arts during 2018, a pioneer in excellence on the high seas, For meaningful travelers who seek enriching experiences, only Princess Cruises offers cruise vacations to help you come back new, providing fresh perspectives by connecting you with nature, cultures, and loved ones in a new way.
One of the best-known names in cruising, Princess Cruises first set sail in 1965 with a single ship cruising to Mexico. Today, the line has grown to become the third largest cruise line in the world, renowned for innovative ships, an array of onboard options including extravagant entertainment, and an environment of exceptional customer service. A recognized leader in the worldwide cruising industry, Princess carries approximately 1.7 million guests each year to more than 360 destinations worldwide aboard a fleet of 18 modern vessels.
Yes. Can you imagine? Have you ever been on a cruise?
I have never been on a cruise. No.
Fellows, have you ever been on a cruise?
Not. Once a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Well, for being on the show today, we've got a cruise for you. You know, I went on a pontoon boat one time and did some fishing with my pops, and I got through it without throwing up. And I hear that that's the worst way to go because the small ships are such a problem, but the big ships, you feel like you're just on a floating island, which is such a good thing. So that's on my to-do list someday is to take a cruise, obviously with Princess, of course.
Well, you know, and being that they're the sponsor, maybe they would give you a nice deal.
Nice. Now all I got to do is find the time to take off and go on that amazing cruise. If I could get a vacation, I'd be mighty happy. So, and obviously the people over there at Princess Cruises are great people.
They're terrific.
They truly do care about their customers and about making travel fun and giving you a chance to escape your life and come back feeling great, which is a really good
thing.
And
they have, you know, they're very, very supportive of the performing arts, and on their ships currently they have an association with Stephen Schwartz, and they're on their third show with him. That this one was written specifically for Princess Cruises.
And it's never been anywhere else, correct? Only on the ship.
Only on the ship.
Which is really...
And it's, what they do is they start on one ship and then they fan out to the other vessels as the year goes through.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's been working with them, and that's fantastic. And, yeah, I can't wait to go on one of those cruises. Again, I've been on one.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
So, Andrew?
We'd obviously also like to thank Performing Arts Live, who's been so great in supporting the show and all the things they've done as well. Obviously, two great resources, Michael, with Performing Arts Live and Princess Cruises, people who care about the arts and try really hard to do good things and get live theater out there in front of people, which is such a great thing. And now, Michael, now that we've talked a little bit about our amazing sponsors who make this show possible, I want to hear about your theatrical week, my friend. What happened?
I wasn't prepared to talk about this, but I think I should talk about it. But I did attend the...
Hold on, is this breaking news? Because I've got a sound effect for that here somewhere. No?
No?
All right. Okay. All right.
No. I didn't know if I was going to be up for it, but I went to the opening of Aladdin.
Aha.
Uh-huh,
at Pantages.
At the Pantages, which is, you know, in itself, just going to the Pantages always, whenever we go and cover a show, which is often, but it's always amazing to me, this theater. You know, I sit there in awe of it, and... this particular opening was just fancy. I mean, it was no red carpet, which they don't do as often anymore.
But Michael sometimes won't walk out of his car without a red carpet. Like, seriously, he's very stringent.
I carry a red carpet in my car. Yeah, so put it out and step down, at least. Say I was on the red carpet.
Just put it on the bottom of your shoes so you always have it there. We'll just tape it on.
It's terrible. But what a spectacular, and I mean that, in the biggest sense of that word, that this production, it is so unbelievable to look at, and the music and the energy that it's very kinetic between the stage and the audience. It actually got two standing ovations during the performance.
Wow. What were the two show-stopping numbers?
You know, it was A Whole New World.
Of course.
And which is a beautiful thing to watch. And the two leads, Adam Jacob being the title lead in particular, and Michael Thomas James is the gentleman who plays the genie. He is out of this world. And he created that role for the Australian tour of the show, and then they brought him into the U.S. tour. He's just a delight. So if you have a chance, anybody listening to this broadcast, take your kids to this too, because it's so family friendly, and it's fun for adults, obviously, and it's just a spectacle that if you miss it, you'll be sorry, because who knows when it will come back again. But I had a great time there. We had, you know, great time with the audience, and it was fun, so I miss that.
Very cool.
And we're going to have the stars on our show soon.
Well, and obviously the Pantages is truly Broadway entertainment come to L.A. I mean, you get to sit there and you get to see really great shows. But more than that, it's such an amazing building in and of itself. You're in a historical place where you can sit and think about how many great performances have gone on there. We always love visiting the Pantages.
Absolutely.
So now, other things going on, though, around. Michael, you've had you've started your new year off well, yeah?
I have.
You're feeling decent?
Yeah, pretty decent. I'm prepping a Million Dollar Quartet for 3D Theatricals.
Of course.
And we open at the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center on the 9th in previews. The 10th is the press opening, and it runs there through the 18th.
Okay.
And then it moves over to the Cerritos Center for the Performing Arts on the 23rd of the month of February and is there through March 4th. So, have you ever seen the show, guys? Million Dollar Quartet?
No, it's totally.
It's a story about, a true story. Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and who's the other one?
I don't remember.
One more. Jeez, just gone right out of my head.
Johnny Cash.
That's right, of course. Wow, and I'm the publicist.
Right.
it's a moment in history when this gentleman who was the owner of a radio station got them all there.
This was Sun Records, right?
Sun Records.
In Memphis. Yeah.
But he got them all there in the studio. None of them knowing that they were all four going to be there at the same time, and it turned into one of the greatest jam sessions in history.
So, cool.
All of those songs from the catalog of each of those performers, respectively, are in this show.
Yeah.
And the audience goes nuts. I saw it when it was on its national tour, but man, oh man, if you have a chance to see that, and we have a special deal, the tickets for fans of these people who are in fan clubs. So if you're in a fan club, you can actually go and see the show.
Cool.
For tickets for $30, it gets two people in.
Any fan club?
Great.
I mean, any of the
four. Well, they have to be a legitimate
fan club. I suppose not my fan club. I've got like two people that I pay to be in my fan club, but they don't get in free.
Maybe make them
slick.
Exception.
Now, how do they get this ticket deal?
They would call the box office for 3D Theatricals.
Okay.
And directly, and I'm sorry that I don't have that number memorized, but 3D Theatricals, you can go online and
absolutely
check it out for tickets, 3dtheatricals.org.
And you mentioned that you're in a fan club for one of the performers featured in the show, for either Johnny Cash or Elvis or, of course, any of the other
friends
or any of the others. But then you mentioned that to the box office, and they'll confirm that, and then you get how much off?
The tickets, normally start at $25 and go up to, $150.
Yeah.
But these are in prime seating areas. They've allocated.
It's a great
deal. Yeah, for $30 for two people.
Yeah. That's a great deal.
Yeah.
Well, now, obviously, 3D Theatricals does such amazing work. They've taken their time to promote great arts throughout Southern California, and they are at two locations now, correct?
They're going to be at the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center, the Cerritos Center for the Performing Arts.
It's amazing. Wow, what a great deal.
Do you sing, any of you? You sing. You sing, yes.
Yes,
I remembered one of you did. Right?
We'd like you to do a selection right now.
In fact, we've queued up a little something for
definitely
us.
Definitely warmed up. Remember, here we go.
Well, now, there is a very handsome gentleman to my right who keeps stealing all my parts. Shall we bring him in?
Oh, you think?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. All right. You've seen him on television in Happy Ending, Ladies and Gentlemen, and My Crazy Ex, Minimum Wage, and Eros, as well as in webisodes for Halliday, Oh My Gods, Workshop, and Michigan Undecided.
He is, of course, a star of the screen and feature films. Of course, that would be hard to be both, wouldn't it? He's had leading roles in East Sider and Bite Me the Movie, and supporting roles in Dead List, Six Ways to Die, and Immersion. Sounds like basically every job I ever took in a fight program. Some of his many short film credits include leading roles in The Magician, The Perfect Number, In Lieu of Flowers, The Last Flight of Icarus, and Brothers to the Bone. Some of his many theatrical credits include Matthew in Private Eyes, Benjamin in The Graduate, James Charles in Delusion, of course, one of the great shows that we've talked about here on this show before, Petruchio in Taming of the Shrew, Guildenstern in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, and Paul Bratter. Thank you. And Barefoot in the Park, of course, another great show, and Laertes in Hamlet.
He joins us today to talk about his co-starring role in Moon Over Buffalo, a great comedy coming to the stage at Santa Monica's Morgan Wixon Theater, January 20th through February 11th. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up one more time for Eric Pierce.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. The most applause I've ever gotten.
Yeah, that's not true, man. I've seen you in other performances. Of course, you're a qualified Shakespeare actor who's done great, great work across the Southland. Delusion, a project we shared, which is a stunt show, an interactive audience participation show run by great John Braver, who's a good friend and a great, great director. So many good people involved in that over the years. But not only that, man, you never stop working. You're doing a show like every week. I see your Facebook post and all that sort of thing. What's it like to be pushing ahead in L.A. and having to continue to work all the time?
I mean, it's just, you got to think of it more as a lifestyle than just a job, you know, where it's just whatever you're doing to make ends meet in between gigs or during gigs, you just always have to accept that you're going to be doing something else.
And how did that lead you to the theater that you're working at now, the Morgan Wixom Theater in Santa Monica? You've done a couple shows with them, correct? More than just this one?
Yeah. No, I did two other shows the past 2 years. It seems to be always in January. I bounced around to plenty of different places around L.A., and I was just happy to stumble upon Morgan Wixom for a show called Private Eyes.
You just auditioned for him then?
Yeah. Wow. I found the breakdown. I think it was in Backstage. It may have been Breakdown Services, but showed up, and as soon as I walked in, I was just immediately blown away by the quality of the space.
Sure.
And I knew immediately that it was a place that I was going to keep coming back to, or try, as long as they'll have me.
As long as they'll keep you coming back. That's a great thing.
How large is the theater? How many does it seat?
It's 201 seats.
It is, yeah.
It's pretty big.
Remember.
Yeah.
Well, so for those who don't know, the theater is located at 2627 Pico Boulevard, right there in the heart of Santa Monica. And this is unheard of. There's free parking in Santa Monica, which, I mean, is a great thing. I've been down to the theater a few times, always seen great work there. But it's the free parking is just west of the theater at the Venice Family Clinic. Is that correct?
Yes.
Cool. Very cool. So you auditioned for them a couple times, and then you saw Moon Over Buffalo come in. You knew the show, yeah?
I actually did not know the
really?
Show. Really? No, I'm I'm a terrible actor in that sense. In that there's a lot of shows out there that are very well known that I actually
because you're too busy working all the time.
Maybe
no time to read.
But so I mean I picked up the play and I read it before the audition. And I mean, obviously, if you know the show, you know how fantastic it is.
Absolutely.
And just the opportunities for a number of different roles.
Wasn't that Carol Burnett's comeback to Broadway?
It was.
Wasn't it?
Yep, it was. It was her return to Broadway after. A few decades, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had a run with the show for about a year back in the mid-90s, which went over pretty well. There were a few Tony Award nominations for it, and we're happy to be bringing it back. I think it's going to be a really strong show.
Can you tell us a little bit about the plot?
Sure. So George and Charlotte Hay are two, as I would describe them, B-list theater celebrities.
That's what I have on my business card.
B-list celebrity.
You don't know me, but you've seen me somewhere in the background of other photos. That's
exactly
what my specialty is.
But so their careers as well as their relationship are both kind of on the rocks. And without giving away too many of the twists and turns of the show, through a number of crazy random happenstances, hilarity ensues as a large opportunity comes at a very inopportune time.
Well said.
Very cool.
Well said. I'd go just based on that alone.
All right.
This is a fun show. And, I mean, you're obviously in a show that's had a legacy of great cast members over the years. And this is a great cast you have, too, of course. Lots of good people involved in this. Some shout-outs to your other cast. Haley Raid is in this, I believe. Mm-hmm. Of course, Jack Stroud, who I've seen, I think, in other productions around the Southland as well. So some really great performers. When you first got cast in this show, what was your preparation like?
For the audition or for the role?
For the audition at this theater. Obviously, you've worked with them a few times. A lot of our younger performers who listen to the show, they go on one or two auditions, and they are shocked by the fact that everything's different. How do you prepare for an audition for each? I mean, you've done so much Shakespeare. You've done so much other kind of theater. You certainly have period pieces, but also you've done some films that are kind of out there as well. How do you prepare for an audition, and what do you like to do when you walk into the room?
Sure. I mean, rule number one, of course, is just if you have the opportunity. Obviously, sometimes with time constraints, you don't always get the chance to do this. But if you're given the time to know your lines.
No kidding, right?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds straightforward, but
get off book for the audition if you can.
If you can, it helps. And I mean, you don't drop the script, but be off book if you can, just because I find that many actors just simply don't know their lines well enough to actually act.
That's actually how I do most of my shows in performance. I find that it adds to creativity. The other actors don't like it that much, but for me...
Make it up. but yeah, so make sure you've got your lines down to the point where you, at least for the most part, you don't have to think about them, because right. you want your attention to be elsewhere in terms of what's there, what's happening in the moment. And then largely the rest of it for auditions, of course, varying from role to role, but is just leaving yourself open to whatever's going to happen there in the room. I found that if you come in with a preset plan and you try to stick to it, it's ultimately probably going to fail. So it's much better to just walk in and be open to what's happening, who you're reading with, and the direction that you get from the director there in the room, and just be ready to adapt and not be too attached to any choices that you've made.
Stay flexible.
I like that.
Absolutely.
Answer.
Yeah, it's a good way
answer.
To do it, right? And as a director, obviously, Michael, you've seen bad auditions in your time, and obviously your job, it's interesting because I think directors always have a strange job in that they not only have to judge the people, but they also have to get the best out of them they yeah. can. They want them to succeed. So I'm sure in a time to time you've seen some auditions that went south very quickly.
Yes, I have.
How funny.
You know, I have to insert this because this is what Eric just said takes me back to what you were saying as well, Andrew, about preparation process and so forth. I was strangely cast in a big musical, which is a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical called Flower Drum Song, which you may or may not be familiar
with.
You've never heard
no,
of it? Flower Drum Song?
I'm pretty sure you just made that up right now. You took three words and put them together, man.
No.
It's ceiling floor chair is what it's called.
No, seriously.
I've never heard of it.
Huge Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Wow, okay.
Which was revived by the Center Theater Group, actually, not too many years ago, and then had a revival on Broadway. My point being... It's an all Chinese, basically Chinese cast, and I don't think I look Chinese, but I had just worked for them in Bye Bye Birdie, and the young man who was supposed to play the son in the family, which is a meaty role, was the young man who had done the motion picture of the play. And then at the last minute, he got another movie, so they had to pull out. And this was here in Los Angeles. And because I was already there, they said, you're dark. Maybe we can pull this off, and we can take care of it, with the makeup and all that kind of stuff. So they actually taped my eyes, right?
What year was this?
Into the hair. Oh, I was young. I was like, 17, 16 years old.
Wow, my goodness.
At any point, or any rate, where I'm telling this story is that Pat Suzuki, who was the woman who created the role, the starring
role.
Very
well-known actress, yeah.
Of... in this, not only on Broadway, but in she went to London with it.
Right.
She unfortunately did not get to play it in the movie. Nancy Kwan did. She had done this show all over the world at some point. There, her first entrance comes a little late into the show, and the cue is from the character that I played.
Wow.
And I didn't like the cue. I didn't like the line because it was supposed to be a funny line. And in rehearsal, nobody laughed. And, I just thought, I'm not going to say this line. Yeah. I'm not going to say this line. So I'm going to say it differently than the director was telling me. And I said it differently. And Pat was coming on stage. And, she and I lock eyes because that's what we're supposed to do.
Sure.
And nothing came out of her mouth.
Oh, wow.
For a good, I'd say, 20 seconds.
You threw her a little bit.
And then I could see her kind of stumbling. And I thought, man, talk about professional.
You didn't change the words. You just changed the inflection enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, and then the show went on.
Yeah.
And at intermission, I was in my dressing room, and the stage manager comes in and says, Michael, Miss Suzuki wants to see you in her dressing room.
You got summoned, dude.
And I walked in there. I said, hey, Pat, because she'd been so nice to me. And, my mom had to be there all the time and so nice to us. And she said, Michael, I have done this show over 3,000 times in productions all over the world. And I do it the same way as I have always done it. And tonight... The way you said that line threw me off. That's why I stood there with egg on my face for 20 seconds.
Was she upset?
She was stern in giving me a tip, and she went on to give me that tip, and she said, "Don't ever do that to an actor. You know, don't take that upon yourself without discussing it with your director and or whomever that you're going to make this kind of a change. And plus, you're changing the actual. You didn't change the line, but you changed the way that it was intended for my entrance.
Wow, especially on an instrument line. But lesson learned, and what a great thing that she took the time to talk.
Well, yes, indeed, and that's how I grew up in theater, was learning from because I did a lot of professional theater. I've started there, and from people like that would give me. I worked with Dick Van Dyke and you know, all these people. So I don't mean to take away from our time here with the boys, but what you said, Eric, is absolutely right. You need to be prepared not only for an audition but for every performance that you give. And we know every performance isn't going to be the same quite. That's the beauty of live theater, but.
But that idea of rehearsal and what it prepares you for, it's what makes theater a unique experience, and that you walk into the room and you get to create the feeling that this is happening for the first time despite six weeks of rehearsal, whatever it turns out to be. So, well, the show we're talking about today is Moon Over Buffalo at the Morgan Wixon Theater, and they've got a ton of cool stuff coming up as well. They've got Little Women coming up in March, Boeing Boeing in May, and Mary Poppins in June, and running through
July. They're going to actually do Mary Poppins.
Pretty
cool,
huh?
That's going to be an interesting challenge on that stage, right?
All right, Eric, now it's time for the question, man. Are you ready?
Oh, the question.
Okay.
Oh.
So you and I met a few years ago. We were chatting before the show about at a Shakespeare audition. Now, Moon Over Buffalo is not Shakespeare. If you had to do one thing for the rest of your life, would you do standard shows, musicals, or Shakespeare?
Ooh, that's a good question.
And keep in mind, I'm recording this, so this will be your career no matter what coming on out.
Well, I'm not actually a big musical guy, so I can rule that one out. It's so hard to choose because there's really, can you qualify it with doing good Shakespeare?
Or there is nothing worse than doing a bad Shakespeare.
There's a pretty significant gap there between good Shakespeare and even mediocre Shakespeare. I'm not sure if I would like to do mediocre Shakespeare for the rest of my life.
Well, there's obviously great Shakespeare people around the Southland.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, we talked about Stephanie Coltrane, one of our shared friends, and people from Shakespeare by the Sea, and Little Fish, and people who do great things. Of course, the Rubicon now. But one of my worst stories ever in a performance was when the director started off at the first rehearsal. We'd done the cold read of Comedy of Errors. And he said, you know, that line Dromio said just doesn't make sense. I think we should change it. And I thought, okay, here we go. the man's changing Shakespeare. You know, we're going to have some trouble.
See,
so I knew we were in trouble.
About.
That's right. You're absolutely
That's
right.
Even worse.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a surprise. So.
Really?
No doubt about it. Eric, obviously, thank you for being here with us today. Will you hang around when we talk to your counterpart here in just a little bit?
Absolutely.
Michael, shall we do a live arts calendar?
I think we will.
Yeah. A terrible snowstorm traps a group of strangers in a quaint boarding house. To everyone's horror, it soon becomes clear that a murderer is hiding among them. A policeman arrives to investigate, and as the characters testify and reenact the events of the night, the trap is set to catch a murderer.
This thrilling whodunit by Agatha Christie, author of so many classic English murder mysteries, is known for its unpredictable ending. Can you pinpoint the murderer before the characters do?
The original production of Mousetrap on London's West End has now been running continuously for 65 years, during which the period it's always been performed, and it's been performed on over more than 25,000 times, making it the most popular whodunit of all time and the longest-running show of any type in the modern era.
Wow. Be sure not to miss this exhilarating performance during the 80th anniversary season of the Lamplighters Community Theater. Performances run now through February 4th. For tickets or more information, visit lamplightersmesa.com. So lamplightersmesa, MESA.com, or call 619-303-5092.
Again, that number is 619-303-5092. Michael, have you ever been down to the Lamplighter?
I have not.
Neither have I. But that show, Mousetrap, is such a compelling piece of drama. You know?
I've never seen that show, I don't think.
Anytime you hear a group of travelers are trapped in a house, you know it's going to be Agatha Christie. You're just like, man. It's either in them or
I've seen other shows of hers, but
so funny, yeah. Wonderful. Well, and obviously I think Lamplighters is doing a lot of good work. They've got some fun things going, and their 80th anniversary anniversary season. That's pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah, pretty cool.
Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest is a Los Angeles-based director, actor, and producer. He directed The Mongoose at the Rode Theater Company in North Hollywood, for which he received an LA Times Critics' Choice Award.
Other directing credits include Thénardier's, am I saying that right?
Thénardier's,
excuse me. Thénardier's in Les Miserables, I should say. Les Miserables, Cabaret, A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Hollywood Fringe Festival, The Backpack, also at the Fringe Festival, Wasp, The Glass Menagerie, and a two-man production of Hamlet.
Some of his acting credits include Frozen Live at the Hypernium, Man of La Mancha with McCoy Rigby, Leonard in Seminar, Bottom at Midsummer Night's Dream, Miss Saigon, Les Mis, and the Scotland National Tour of Why Do You Stand There in the Rain?
We are privileged to have him with us here today, telling us more about his upcoming directorial role in Moon Over
Buffalo is just south of Buffalo.
At the Morgan Wixon Theater in Santa Monica on stage January 20th through February 11th. Please welcome Michael Thomas Viscar.
Yeah.
Crazy for the director.
You can tell we got a bunch of actors in the audience that know he's a director. They're trying to get cast.
I want to carry that around with me wherever I go.
Wouldn't that be nice to have as your cell phone ring? Yeah. You could just buzz it every now and then and feel good about you. Oh, my fans, they're applauding.
So I saw you. I didn't know you then, but I saw you in Man of La Mancha with Davis.
Oh, yeah. Great. Again. Yes, he is fantastic.
Yes, he is. Yeah, that boy, can sing a little bit, can't he?
Just a little bit. And a nice, super nice person.
Well, Davis is, of course, a friend of the show. We've had him on a couple times. And, man, his storytelling ability. Yeah. I could watch him, like, tell the phone book story, you know? I mean, it's and the number was, and you're going, yeah, tell me the number, please. He's amazing.
And really, you not only did it, of course, for Tom and Kathy Rigby and her husband Tom, for their theater in La Mirada, but also at the Valley Music Performing Arts.
That's right.
Yeah, out at VPAC. And that space is
amazing. Mm-hmm. The best sound of any theater in Southern California.
And huge.
As far as I'm
we had
1,700 seats.
We had enough space for a second set behind the first set.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
You had some great performers in you with that in that show with you, of course, too.
And you went to you saw that too.
I did at the VPAC. It was great. Yeah. He was great. Obviously, you guys did a great, great job.
Thank you.
Tell me about how you got involved with this production and how you cast the fine young man sitting next to you there.
Well, I saw a breakdown for a director needed for their season at the Morgan Wixon, and I came in and interviewed. They told me to choose which production I wanted to.
Wow.
To direct or interview for, and so I chose Moon Over Buffalo because I like Ken Lodwig. I know Lend Me a Tenor, Crazy for You, and I love farces. I love comedy.
Yeah.
You know, there's not much more entertaining than seeing a good farce.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in, I interviewed. They gave me the job, and then throughout the casting process, they said it was the most people they've seen at an audition. They've seen it's the most people they've seen at an audition before.
Wow.
So we saw like 80 or 90 people.
Wow.
Eric was one of the first 15 people, I think, that we saw, if I'm remembering correctly. But, yeah, we went through like a two-week audition period where it was two initial auditions and then a callback period. And I found just wonderful, wonderful cast members. Eric, his counterpart, Desiree Gillespie, our Charlotte and George are just these phenomenal actors, and our the woman playing the grandmother, Ethel, is I can't say enough about this cast and how wonderful they are.
Am I in it?
You can be Eric's understudy.
That's on air. I'm showing up. I'm putting on my resume now. Eric's understudy.
And then I mysteriously disappear.
And then,
it's weird when I Tanya Hardy him, man. that leg's gone, dude. Now, this is an interesting show because it's not a new show, right? The show has been done a lot of times. How, as a director, do you stay away from doing what's cliche? Or do you say, look, this has worked time and time again. Let's do it.
One thing that I came into this process and something that I have, as an artist, grown to be more wanting to do is the idea of being able to cast anything ethnically diverse, and casting the best person for the part, and not especially a play that is kind of older. We don't have to worry about the constraints of what the time period necessarily would be.
Yeah, see, as an old white man who can't act, I'm against that.
Well, and as a young white man going into my career, it kind of you know, detracts from what I will be doing in the future, but I think it's an important thing for us to do.
And what a light it is to be able to do that now,
yeah.
because audiences wouldn't come see a show that was cast diversely in some in
right.
earlier times, and now that's what revitalizes theater for me. I go in there and I see a part portrayed with somebody who has a different background, who has a different take on it. That's what makes it interesting now. What a cool thing we can do.
Yeah, and so we have, you know, we have Desiree is an African American. Her parents are both white. I mean, I guess everyone else in the production is white, but Des was the best person we had come in for Roz, and I've worked with her previously. And
it's Desiree Gillespie you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, Desiree Gillespie.
Very cool.
And, you know, that was one thing that I thought we could bring to this piece. And just to...
Has that ever been done before with a show like this?
I'm not sure. I didn't even think about looking
of
into
course,
that.
No.
It was just something that seemed like this should be something that is second nature to all of us.
Well, and thank goodness that it finally is becoming that, because farces, and a lot of Agatha Christie's farces, obviously, because they were written at such an antiquated
right.
time, have so many struggles. They've changed the name of Ten Little Indians a number
yeah.
of times, of course, and then there were none of as it's known now. And, you know, all these different things, you see that some of these had a terrible history,
yeah.
but the work is still qualified.
Yeah.
The work is still important. And the fact that we can do that, that we can make
mm-hmm.
it valuable to
mm-hmm.
our modern audience, is such an important thing
yeah.
to be able to do. How did you get involved with this theater? You said you went in there and you first had your director interview.
Yeah.
And did you seek them out, or when you saw the call, did you say, that's something that I want to do because of their season?
I saw the call, and it had been a 6 months or so since I directed, and I was
okay.
like, no, this should be good directing, because I do Frozen 4 to 7 days a week, and, you know, it's...
As a performer.
As a performer, yeah. yeah I was part of the
That's
got to
keep you from directing a little bit, right?
I mean, it's just time-consuming. So I've been with that show since it's the beginning, almost.
And are you local to Santa Monica?
I live in Glendale.
Cool. So that was a bit of a trek for you.
I have
to get
a giant
down there.
Triangle around Southern California that I drive every day.
Have you worked at the Glendale Center Theater?
I have not. I actually just moved to Glendale in the last 4 or 5 months. I used to be just down the street from here.
The reason I'm interested to know about kind of how you discovered the theater is because I've seen two shows there and enjoyed
mm-hmm.
them both very much, but it really is kind of a hidden spot.
Yeah.
Now, there's lots of other theaters there on 3rd Street Promenade. Of course, there's a couple of theaters, performance spaces, and all throughout Santa Monica, but this one is really very central, easy to get to,
yeah.
and a lot of fun. So had you seen shows there before?
I had no idea this place
wow.
existed. So I walked in, and I walked into the lobby because that's the front door, and you're like, oh, this is a nice lobby.
Right, yeah.
And then you walk into the theater itself, mm-hmm. and it's gigantic.
Yeah.
For, like, the building itself looks like nothing.
Yeah.
And then you walk in,
right.
and it just keeps going.
And it's high, it's tall, they've got fly
yeah.
space there and everything.
They've got really a rail.
The exterior of it, I just saw a picture of it online, I think has been modernized
huh.
as opposed
yeah.
to what it looked like when I worked there. It was an all-beautiful
mm-hmm.
wood outside
yeah.
Facade, right?
Yeah, it's still got the wood facade, but I think it's just over time.
Oh,
it doesn't look
okay.
nearly as pretty as
well,
it.
To me it looked like it
yeah.
was cement now or something.
It's got, I think it's got some red stucco type on the outside
mm.
as well.
Mm.
But yeah, it's...
Do you prefer directing as versus being an actor?
Acting is more challenging to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I love acting because of that. You know, I grew up, my mother's a director, so I grew up with that mindset.
Wow, that must have been wild
you,
to grow up with
really?
A director
yeah.
mom.
I, think
I need you stage left right now, young man. Come on.
So that's how I view a lot of theater, like
yeah.
even as an actor, which is, I think, useful for me as an actor. As directors
right.
are like, okay, I don't have to worry about Michael. He knows...
Yeah.
He can adjust to whatever's happening.
Sure.
Right.
But so it's more second nature to me, the
mm-hmm.
direction part.
See, and I find it just the opposite.
Yeah.
I've directed as well, and I find it more challenging as a director than being an actor. I think for my take on acting, I mean, I was, you know, lucky having a career that I did in film and TV
mm-hmm.
and professional theater, but I didn't study it. I mean, it was
yeah.
kind of innate, and
mm-hmm.
I think good actors, that's kind of the basis of why they're a good actor.
Yeah.
And you know, then you can study and polish up,
mm-hmm.
you know, your craft. And but a director, you're dealing with so many personalities and egos
mm-hmm.
and all sorts of things,
yeah.
and that you know, sometimes challenge you as a director, and they don't want
yeah.
to do what your thought is, you know, in this particular...
Yeah, it's... As a director, you're dealing with more outside forces than as an actor. And that is the challenging part, I think, for anyone, is, you know, finding a way to create an environment that is collaborative, but also benefits the story that you're trying to tell.
And are you, as a director, do you give the actor, Eric, did you give Eric enough space to actually bring to the role how he felt the character was?
Absolutely. This is actually one of the things that I...
He's sitting right next to me.
Guys. Am I going to go on? So come on, man.
I've got an understudy for you now. So.
Man. No, it's true, though. It's hard, harder than you would think to find a director that knows how to talk to actors. No, and that's one of the nice things about Michael, is because he is an actor, he understands how to do that.
Right.
How to tell you what it is that he wants out of you, but then allows you to find a way to give it to him, as opposed to nailing it down for you from start to finish.
Right. Well, that's great. That in itself is an art.
Yeah.
And it's, you direct that way. And I kind of think that's kind of what I think, too. So,
that's a wonderful thing. The voice that you speak to an actor, and has to be slightly different than the voice you speak to other people in, because of where they're coming from and what they're trying to do. Obviously, embodying someone else is challenging enough, but also you're kind of out there all alone when you first start a production, you know, and you have to have a director who understands that first kind of tender-footed walk through the part, so you can finally figure out what you want to do, which is such an important tool.
So to this, it's interesting. I just thought of this. You know, there's so many directors on Broadway who are very celebrated, Jerome Robbins being one of them.
I'm sorry, celibate?
Celebrated.
Oh, maybe I was missing something.
Some are celibate. But he has always had a reputation of being, totally lethal.
No doubt.
However, there was a brilliance about him that, you know, brought it all together, and what you saw on the stage. And, I mean, whether or not the company was happening with him, you know, they did what he ultimately had to do, what he said to do. So in that case, does that make him really a bad director or a good director?
That's what we're talking about right now in the world, is we're saying, look, there's a lot of things that we've let go because that was the only way they could work before. But now we're talking about a total community, group of people, how we evolve and how we change and how we grow. And the idea is, it's like, you know, I know a lot of kids who came from really lousy parents. You know, just because those parents were lousy and the kids turned out okay doesn't excuse bad parenting. Right. You have to try to round yourself out. You have to keep evolving and keep changing. And in the theater world, we're seeing a ton of that, not only with the new things that we're allowed to do with multimedia and that sort of thing, but ways we can tell stories and re-engage people. And probably the best example of that is, of course, Hamilton, which changed the way storytelling was done and said, hey, look, if you tap into something true, people will come see it, which I think is fascinating. So.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have children? Are you married? Or?
I have a girlfriend and two dogs.
Children, you can have them. That's right. No kidding. I don't need it. Well, Michael knows. Michael's got two dog children himself.
Yes.
They take up enough time as it is.
Yeah, boy, it is like having children. I asked that only because I wondered what your relationship would be as a director with your children.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, I know that because my mother was also a professor where I went to college.
Which was?
Pepperdine University.
Very nice, very nice.
And so she taught me in classes, and she directed me on stage, and people asked me, is it weird to have your mother direct you? And I said, well, no, because she's been directing me my entire life. She just doesn't use stage terms, except for when I was playing basketball. And she's like, I'll see you after intermission. I mean, halftime.
We're going to go to tryouts.
or how was rehearsal? I mean, practice.
That's right. That's funny.
Along those lines.
That's great. I love that. That's really good. The show we're talking about is Moon Over Buffalo at the Morgan Wixon Theater there in the heart of Santa Monica. Easiest way to get tickets, I think, is to call the box office directly at 310-828-7519. But if you prefer to go online, you can, of course, do that at www.morgan-wixson. That's WIXSON.org.
And the beautiful part about this is you can get tickets for $23.
That's unheard of.
And for seniors and students, $20.
That's right.
You can barely get a Wendy's hamburger and a combo meal for that.
There is a very small amount of thematic material in the show, obviously. It's recommended for children 13 and older.
Yeah.
So obviously it's a great fun show, and it is a farce, and you will laugh.
Yes.
And it explores some fun ideas that I think are still valuable today as well. Yeah. So.
And as we say, almost on every show here, put down the remote, get your feet on the floor, get yourself out the door, and take your children to, it's very important, if it's appropriate for children, to get to the theater and see the live arts and expose them to that, because it can be life-changing for them in many ways. Not necessarily become an actor, but but to understand how to communicate with other people. And it's something that I think we have to protect in this country.
And the importance of driving live arts as a form of communication, because we lose that, we lose the ability to associate with each other, and we have enough with cell phones and all that sort of thing. Take your people out and see somebody working hard on stage. It's a really great experience. So,
and we should just give a little plug for their season again, in addition to Moon Over Buffalo, which is running January 20th through the February 11th time period. Little Women, the musical or the play?
It is the musical.
It is the musical. Little Women, the musical, which is awesome, March 17th through the 14th of April. Boeing Boeing, which is a comedy, kind of a farce, too.
Another farce.
And The Beautiful Mary Poppins, being the musical from Mr. Richard Sherman and his brother, Robert, June 30th through August 4th. So check it out. That's a great lineup for a season, and enjoy.
Yeah. That's right. And now, the amazing Eric Pierce and the amazing Michael Thomas Visker. It's time.
And now, embarrassing moments.
The audience seems happy today. Maybe you guys will get off easy.
Okay.
This is a bit we do where we talk a little bit about things that have happened to us or we've seen happen on stage or certainly on a film set would be valuable as well, where something went terribly wrong and yet we recovered from it and went on. It's kind of a lesson that the show must go on sort of thing. Either of you have anything?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's...
Eric brought a list,
yes,
man.
which story do I tell? I was thinking about this. I'll choose one of the tamer ones. It wasn't on stage live, but one of the things I also do is, similar to yourself, is stage combat choreography.
That's right.
Not so much anymore, but every now and then, as the opportunity allows, I'll pick up a gig.
Mine's if my body feels like I can take it.
Yes.
Can I get out of bed this morning?
Yes, I know that feeling. So I was working with a group of student actors who, you know, had various levels of comfortability with the physical nature of stage combat. And so as I was sitting them down to just kind of give a little introductory talk about it, I wanted to give them some just really basic rules as to what they could do to make sure they didn't get hurt, you know, just some general safety rules. There was just a bunch of stuff going on in my life at that time. Like, I wasn't sleeping very well.
This isn't gonna end well.
I was definitely not sleeping well. My mind was not all there. So I'm standing in front of this group of impressionable young students, and I'm giving them these rules, and I say, you know, so there's, if you're worried about it, if you're afraid, there's only three things you need to remember, and you will never get hurt. And, you know, the first thing is this, and the second thing is this, and I got to the third thing, and I was like, and for some reason, it had just completely left my head. And I'm staring at these faces of the students who are all just, like, waiting in anticipation for the third rule.
Tell me what's going to save my life.
And for the life of me, it wouldn't come to me. And so I eventually tried to play it off like it was a joke. It was just like, don't worry about the third thing. Just do the first two things and you'll be fine. that one's still
keeps me up at night. Where are those children now?
That's right. Well, half of them died.
Yes, most of them are dead.
They're in various hospital wards across the country.
Oh, man.
Two-thirds were
Michael?
Okay, but that third group.
Okay. So, in college, I was doing a production of Tartuffe as Cléante. And Tartuffe is in all rhyming couplets. So, I have, at the end of the play, I have this one line that is a rhyming couplet, sets up a rhyming couplet for someone else. So we get, it's just two words that I interject randomly throughout. So we get to this, I think it was like our second performance, and Tartuffe says his line, and it's silent. And then I just blurt out, "That's not right!" Wasn't anywhere close to what my line was. And
not
so then,
rhyming.
And it didn't rhyme. And so the woman who was playing one of the other parts, she's the housekeeper, she then just said her line, and then we moved on. But I think that was the most embarrassing moment I had.
Your cast obviously knew. Did the audience notice, or were you able to kind of push through?
I don't think they did. The director laughed, like, he laughed so hard.
Who's
about
the director?
It. His name's Jason Chanos, and he's the associate artistic director at Kansas City Rep right now.
Very funny. Wow.
Yeah, he thought it was hilarious. Yeah, that's probably
so you walked off stage embarrassed? Or
I was more. We still had like 5 minutes left on stage, so right. I got to stand there on stage embarrassed. But you know, it was what it's live theater, so yeah. That's the fun part of it is figuring out what we do when we mess up.
No doubt about it, and finding a way to go on, which is a great metaphor for life, anyway.
Yes.
So always a good thing.
You've had a moment or two on stage yourself that's been pretty embarrassing, haven't you, Andrew?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've always been calm and fine and absolutely prepared. I will tell you this real quick. My first true embarrassing moment, although I've had many, I've told the one about where my daughter stood up in the back when I was playing Lear, or when I was playing Kent and Lear, and she cheered, said, "Daddy, you won," right at the end. And I'm going, like 1,500 people looking at my little girl, and I'm like, thanks so much. My favorite, though, happened this year at Christmas Carol, where I had Tiny Tim on my back. I'm playing Bob Cratchit at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza, and I come out, and I go to put Tiny Tim down while I'm dressed in my full overcoat and scarf, and find that somehow my scarf has intertwined with his buttons on his coat, and I can't get him off my back. And so for the entire, what seems like a 20-minute Cratchit scene, I've never wanted to cut my lines more than during this one. I had to carry this kid, who's not near as small as he used to be. He started off when he was 5, and now he's 9. So I had to carry him around in full overcoat, full scarf, trying to make this all work. And the funniest part was, we went to pray, and this young boy, who's a great little actor, Luke Pryor, he thought, well, everybody's bowed their head. This is my time to fiddle with my scarf and undo this. And, of course, the audience doesn't close their eyes during the prayer. And so I smacked his hand just like I would have smacked my own little boy's hand for, you know, fumbling around during the prayer. And he just immediately folded his head, and as soon as the prayer was over, he said his "God bless us, everyone," and I popped the scarf and ripped the button off the coat and was able to go on. But boy, I was sweating more than I've ever sweat on stage. This kid, it felt like carrying a college student around, man. I had him like on my hip, and I was like breathing real hard, you know, trying to get him. But it honestly, my heart rate went up a little bit there. But the coolest part of that story is this 9-year-old boy, when we walked off stage, I set him down, and he gave me the biggest hug, and he said, "We did it! We got through it!" And I thought, embarrassing moments. I got to tell this on embarrassing moments. So, yeah. Michael, of course, you've had a few that were a little more air-conditioned than that story.
Well, yeah, you can put it that way. Excuse me for clearing my throat. This happened when I was about, I would say, probably 13, 14, and I was doing Bye Bye Birdie with the great Dick Van Dyke at the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, which at that time was in the round, because that was the craze for in Southern California, theater in the round. So they reconfigured on the inside. The opening of the show is if you've seen Bye Bye Birdie, is a transition of high energy with the young teenagers in the show coming from New York to Sweet Apple, Ohio. That's the transition, and the Conrad Birdie character, you know, is introduced when they get to Sweet Apple, Ohio. So we're in this, you know, the orchestra's playing frantically in this transition, and I'm on stage with the rest of the company, and we have we've got flags, American flags, and we have to look like we're in New York with one costume, and then we had to underdress for Sweet Apple, Ohio in that kind of costume.
That's what you were supposed to do.
Yes, that's what I was supposed to do. And then the runners come up through the aisles and they give you your props and so forth. And this all happened in a, not a blackout, but a strobe light situation. So it was, very difficult to keep focused on what you were doing. However, when the lights came up, I thought, gee whiz, it's cold in here. And I looked down, and I had this American flag, red sweater on, white shirt, and I looked down, and I was standing there in my dance belt because I had forgotten to put my pants on.
Holding the American flag, which I think would be the greatest gif of all time.
Yeah.
Don't you think so?
I think so.
On the stage, doing the number, and I completed the number that way, and then I ran off just mortified. I mean, some people on that side of the theater got their money's worth, I guess.
But the good thing is that's where Pantsless Fridays came for our
show. Yes. Yes, and we had to stop doing that on Friday because of that. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the name of the show is Moon Over Buffalo at the Morgan Wixon Theater. We encourage you to check that out, as well as Lamplighter's production of Mousetrap. The Mousetrap, a great Agatha Christie show. We want to thank both of our guests today. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Eric Pierce and Michael Thomas Visker. You guys are obviously great, great performers, and we wish you the best with the show. Hope it goes fantastic.
Yeah, we'll try to get out there and see it for sure.
Right. Hey, Michael, when do I see you again?
How about next week on the radio?
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.